You're watching Deprogrammed. This is the NCF show devoted to fighting back against the forces of ideological conformity, particularly among the young. My name's Harrison Pitt. I'm a senior editor at the European Conservative, and I'm thrilled to be joined today, as ever, by Evan Riggs, who is a freelance journalist, and our special guest this week, Mo Najmi, a writer, podcaster, and social commentator. Now, Mo, you've written quite a bit and spoken quite a bit about parallel cultures and ethno-religious enclaves in Britain. Right now, we're seeing a crisis in the Labour Party over the fate of their Muslim voters due to the conflict in the Middle East. Do you think it is likely that we will see the emergence of a distinctly Muslim party in the coming years in Britain?
I think so, only in sort of like communal basis, but not really within politics. Unless we get proportional representation, nothing is happening anyways on that score. And also, like, most of this comes from, I mean, I know we talk about Muslims, but a lot of this comes from people who are from Pakistan or people who are from Somalia, all the impoverished sort of Muslim countries.
Yes.
Their people don't number enough to merit any sort of problem. Politically, yes. But socially, obviously, there is a lot of problems.
I see. So you don't think that we're going to see voting explicitly along ethno-religious lines in the next coming years, in the sense of there being a Muslim party, but there will nevertheless be a tendency on the part of ethnic minorities to tack to the left.
There's always been, right? So when you check in Rochdale, mm-hmm. all those places and stuff, mm-hmm. obviously they are voting on lines of their, ethnic. Reality sort of a thing, and their attachment to the people who are representing. So they vote Labour not because they have an allegiance to Labour, it's because their representation is over there, the people who are there, right? So if let's say another party comes in, they might vote for that party. But even within Rochdale, the majority of people are not Pakistani. The majority of people are white British over there. They're voting for Labour for their Labour reasons, right? So that is a problem, right? But if we go a little bit back, right, to the 1960s, of why these people are actually voting for Labour. So the reason why I'm saying it's not a very Muslim thing as such, it's a more of a Pakistani thing, because Pakistanis tend to have been here for a while now. They're within certain systems, they're within your legal systems, they're within your politics and stuff like that, so they build their roots within those things, but they have a lot of them have still stayed connected to Pakistan rather than to Britain, right? So that's where the problem happens. So in 1960s, I think it's 1965 or 1964, Pakistan in their country towards the Kashmir region, the northern region, they wanted to build dams over there, right? So they flooded over 200 villages in Pakistan. Those people were displaced and they had to be, relocated elsewhere. Labour at that time thought, it would be a good idea to get all these village people, literal village people who could not even integrate into the Pakistani metropolitan cities to come over here and work in the north of England, right? So this is the same Labour Party who was supposed to be pro-working class, right? They got 50,000 of these Kashmiri Punjabis, but they were mainly Punjabis. They're from Mirpur area, like around the Kashmir area, to come over here and work in the factories and stuff like that. 50,000 of them relocated to all over northern Pakistan,
northern England.
Yeah, but that's what they did, right? And these people were unlikely to integrate. This is the same region where you have the highest rate of within Pakistan, highest rate of sexual violence, rape, and on and on and on.
And these you're talking about troubles. the Maripuri region.
Yeah, those Punjabi regions and stuff. So, and the 70-80% of the people that the Pakistanis that live in England are from those areas.
I see.
Right?
Yeah. I think maybe before we get too deep into the ethnic conflicts inside of Pakistan, we should maybe point out to our viewers why we're discussing Pakistan this week and what is happening in Pakistan now that is likely, just like what happened in Israel and Gaza border a few months ago, to impact Londoners and our kind of British viewing cohort. What is it that's been going on this past week in Pakistan?
Well, they have had the sham elections again, haven't they? So, well, it's a mockery. I don't even understand, like, personally, like, okay, maybe viewers should know if they don't already know. Like, my parents are from Pakistan. I've lived there for 10 years. I wasn't born there. But I don't see that as a serious country, to be honest. I see that as a country built on stolen lands. And it's funny that they are the ones who cry about Israel all the time, while they themselves are on the lands of India. So sort of like, but that apart, they're having elections where they had the army with the help of the ruling party right now had captured Imran Khan on whatever basis, whatever. The thing is, like, he might not be a friend of the West itself, but that's irrelevant to us. To that country, he's a friend to them in whatever capacity, and people chime with him. But because the feudal lords, which you still have in Pakistan, could not have him take control because he's, you know, he has a party for the people. So they sort of like imprisoned him, you know, and he's still in prison. So his party was made illegal as well. So his party couldn't stand in the elections. So every member of his party stood up as an independent, and they still won the votes, right? So it's a miracle, because every independent of his party, most of the independent of his party, won their votes. So now they are in like loggerheads with the ruling party, who put him in prison because both of them can't find majority, because the independents have that much of a majority, right?
Why did everybody vote for these people? If they're
because
so
people
blind?
Are fed up. In Pakistan, people are fed up with these, you know, the party of Nawaz Sharif and, you know, the former Benazir Bhutto's party, the People's Party and stuff like that. They're all feudal lords, right? They want something better for their country, right? And they're fed up of this sort of...
These elite struggles.
Yeah, it's elite struggles. But from our point of view, we might be in the favor of the people who are going against the elites. But it's not that clear-cut of a situation, because most of the elites are the ones who are moderates, religious-wise as well, right? But they're also very, very, very corrupted, like highly corrupted people. They're the ones who take money from the aids that America and Britain give them, like, you know.
They embezzle it and all that sort of thing.
It's so much. So, but the thing is, why should it matter to us? I have no idea. Well, I can't answer that. I don't understand why should it matter to
us. I think the answer staring us in the face is that it really shouldn't.
No.
But it will.
But it will, and it completely undercuts the mainstream complacent cosmopolitan liberal narrative that has been abroad in the West for some time, which you mentioned the Labour government of the 1960s. I imagine that Harold Wilson himself was partly captive to this illusion that, you know, Britain is, Heathrow is sort of a magic liberal-making portal. And as soon as, you know, people fly through the gates of Heathrow, they become as British or as liberal or as cosmopolitan as everyone else. Whereas what's been proven over the last few decades or so is that people remain incredibly fervently attached to their ancestral tribal loyalties. And rather than agitating for them in Pakistan, they will do so here, and they will, you know, derail British politics.
This is the reason why I brought up that 1965 blunder by the Labour Party, is that this is not a decade-old problem. This is not two-decade-old problem. This is an age-old problem, which was shown in the 1960s, that you get these people in, they are not going to assimilate, because most of them didn't even speak English. They still brought them over here, right, to displace the working-class people of England, because there were gaps in there, right? So this has always been the problem, I think. So it's just maybe people are disconnected from who they are in Britain. Not maybe, most likely that is the problem. And they are looking for easy fixes. And nobody really wants to do that much apart from complain about it. You know, there's no action to it. I complain about it as well.
Yes.
But it's not turning into action, because action means you actually have to do something about it.
Yes, and you were saying, you absolutely, and you were saying that we're far too, before we came on air, you were saying that we're in Britain, we are sort of so far too cavalier and blasé when it comes to giving, devaluing the meaning of citizenship. Would you like to elaborate on that point?
This has been my main gripe for a very long time, right? So, and people need to understand this, that I am not ethnically British, obviously, as you can see. you know, I like, you know, I have a weird funny accent as well, so people can understand that I'm not from here, right? But why did I come to Britain, right? And from that, I want to explain why are different people coming to Britain, and who should we accept and who should we not accept, who should we give to citizenships to and not to. I came to Britain because I wanted to be British. I didn't come to Britain for economical reasons. I mean, you would be an idiot to come to Britain in after 2000 for economical benefits, unless you're that dirt poor, right? Because
I came from Canada, so it's actually been really good for me.
Yeah. So if I actually wanted to move for financial reasons, I would have gone to America, and I have family in America. You know, because over there, I would have earned more, I would have done more and stuff.
But then you have to live in America.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I didn't. Yeah. But I came over here because I associated with Britain way before I came to Britain. Right?
How so?
I read history a lot. And I because when you are in Pakistan, so I lived in Pakistan for 10 years from the age of 15 onwards. And, you know, you're sort of told to hate Britain. Right, but if you are a curious mind, you would look into it, and then if you have a sensible mind, you would say, well, I can't find enough reasons to hate Britain, but what I can find is a lot of reasons to admire Britain, right? So you as a country are complaining about British colonialism. That's a small freaking island that conquered over you. You should be ashamed of yourself, right? And there's a lot to admire of a little island people conquering the whole world. It's like, what can you not admire about that? And not just that, that they have given the world everything that we have in the modern world has come from that, right? From England, mainly within Britain, from England it has come, right? So I didn't understand how can you hate, but that was the same reason why I left Islam as well a while back, because Muslims indoctrinate their kids to hate Jewish people, right? And not more so, like Pakistanis are the worst with that. Every single problem that they have in their country is because of the non-existent Jews that live over there, right? So it's everything is to do with Israel for some reason, right?
Yeah.
And I, whatever my makeup was as a person, I just wasn't inclined to hate people whom I have never met, never interacted with. It just didn't sit right with me. And my own childish interpretation of Islam at that time as well was sort of like, oh, it seems against the core of the message of Islam that you're trying to give, right? But obviously I further found out that the reasons why I left Islam was because that is the core of the message. It is a warmongering ideology. But apart from that, I left Islam because they, like, one of the main reasons was because they kept on telling me to hate Jewish people. And when you look into it, it was like, well, but these people, against all odds, keep on achieving good things, you know, keep on overachieving. Why should I hate them? Right? So that's the same reason why I love the Japanese as well. You drop two nuclear bombs and within 50 years, they're there, better than all their neighbors. Like, how can you hate such people? It doesn't matter if their ideology is not something.
Does that also apply to the Germans, even though they didn't get nuked?
I don't think so. They achieved anything.
The Germans?
Germans?
Yeah.
It's the biggest economy in the world.
Look, having I don't think so. Having economy, like a good economy or stuff like that, is an achievement, right? That's because of where you are, your happenstance, or what decisions that you've made. But if you look in Germany, if you go into Germany and work in Germany and stuff like that.
I lived there for a year, which is why I ask.
So the thing is, over there, people are following orders, right? People, there's very less innovation going on over there. And that tells me it's not a success. Compare that to Japan.
Very innovative.
Exactly.
That's a good point. It's interesting.
Right? Anyone can follow orders, you know, and Germans are good with that, aren't they?
It's very true. And giving them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, but
I digress.
No, no.
Well, I don't know where I went with what I was saying.
Can I ask you what might be a provocative question? So I'll tell a little story here first to get to that. When I first came to the UK, I was not aware that it's frowned upon here to carry a knife on you. I always carried a pocket knife on me since I was like 15. Yeah. Like my dad gave me my first one. I used to be a firefighter and a bartender, so I used it like every day. I carried a knife on me for I guess it'd be 13 years straight, every day. Came to the UK, was carrying a knife, had an incident where I was at the airport. Obviously, you can't fly with it wherever, but like, they're like, oh, no, not only are we going to have to take this, like, you're going to have to speak to the police.
Are we talking about a pocket knife or a kitchen knife?
It wasn't like a giant machete. It was waving around in Heathrow.
I was about to say.
No, just like a little pocket knife.
That's something I would be doing.
I ended up having to go into this room with these like three police officers, and they're like, don't worry, you're not in trouble. We have to like go through the procedure or whatever. And they gave me this like identity card. And the cop literally was like, I identify as white British. How do you identify? And I like looked, and there was like 40 different things on it. It was like gypsy, Irish traveler, white British, all this stuff. And I was like, I would say I'm like white Canadian. You know, and I didn't see that, so I was like, white, and he's like, great, and checked it off. Just because we're kind of jumping all over the place here, and I think that identity and ethnicity is very important in this conversation. How would you identify yourself today, like living in Britain?
British?
If I gave you the card.
I would Asian British.
Right? Asian British?
So there's a reason, because I do not like Pakistan, right? So if it is my heritage, I understand the point of, like, you know, where I've come from. But I wasn't born over there, and I'm not assimilated. I never assimilated into their culture, right? And that was the main reason as well why I left. Like, I don't think so it's mutually beneficial to live in a country, whether you agree with them or not, if you're not accepting their culture. Whether we say, like, Pakistani culture is not good or bad, but it's their culture, right? So if I don't assimilate into the culture, I don't think so I have a right to call myself Pakistani, right? So just because of my ethnicity doesn't mean that I'm a Pakistani.
Okay. So the reason I asked this is because when we had Andy Ngo in here, the race riots in France were just happening. And I tried to make the point to Andy where it's like, I think it's very hard on the people who like want to move to France from wherever and be French. But who's kind of like co-ethnic kin or people who would be roughly lumped into their same identity category are causing all these problems, because they're like, I just want to go along to get along. I just want to contribute and be a part of Britain. Do you find that's like actually offensive to you when you see these kinds of things and you get lumped in with it?
I find it frustrating, but not for myself. But I get angry at British authorities rather than myself, because who is allowing them to come over here? Not me.
Right.
It is our liberal elites who have lost a sense of themselves, who are allowing them, right? So this as well, that message that I want to put across, that we need to divert our anger and our frustrations towards where the changes can be made from, right? It's not going to look, okay, let's go even deeper, right? All of the problems that we're seeing right now, they are symptoms, right? Mass immigration problem, crimes from them, Islamism, Marxism, all of these problems, the can't get doctor appointments, whatever, these are all symptoms, right? And we are going after them all the time, right?
Without curing the root cause.
The root cause is the loss of British traditionalism. That is the root cause. We have a set of people that we are saying is a nation. A nation is not a nation unless it knows itself, unless it is rooted in something and everyone agrees on what it is about, right? This is the disjoint that we're seeing in America as well, where they can't even agree when it was made independent, right?
Well, yeah, the Super Bowl was last night,
yeah.
And I was like, they've got a black national anthem. You can't have a country with two national anthems.
No. And what are we doing now? In BBC, we're putting out these messages that, you know, the black people were over here, always here, whatever like that. You are disrupting.
Building Stonehenge.
This is a slightly potentially controversial point, but like, to what extent are we, like, by putting all of our eggs in the assimilation basket and saying that there needs to be much more of an emphasis on assimilation, it seems to me, Mo, that like you are a very unique case. You're like you are someone who has, as it were, flown the perch of your tribal ancestral identity and have opted into a new one. And that's a very rare thing. Like, most human beings don't have it in their power to fly the perch of their tribal identity.
Yeah, and then they should not be given citizenships
indeed.
Otherwise.
But I suppose the point is that one point that you've made before, and I think it's completely correct, is that so long as Pakistanis live in parallel communities in this country, they will hold views and allegiances that are just completely abhorrent to those held by native Brits. But is it even possible to do assimilation on such a vast scale, given the inherent tribalism of human nature?
No, the thing is, we don't need to, right? So we should have a project of assimilating, integration, having to speak the language and whatnot. But you cannot go into people's mind and change their mind, right? Okay, now let's take it away from Pakistan and even...
More broadly.
Czech France, if someone has a dual nationality with France, right? Mm. So right now they might be saying, oh, it's okay to have a dual nationality with France, but you know, Britain and France have been at war for 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. It's not a friendly country to Britain itself, right? Historically. Mm-hmm. So how can you have competing, sort of loyalties to it? So the problem happens is, regardless of assimilation and integration or whatever, we should have a policy of no dual nationalities. So we have to go into the root causes, what is causing these problems, not just because Pakistanis are causing problem right now, we're talking about it. This should have been talked about regardless of anything.
I completely agree with you. So
we can give people, because a lot of people say, when I say this, I always have this point that people are saying, oh, but I have a nationality from Denmark, and there's a friendly country. It's like, right now.
What if there's a conflict in 100 years, you know?
And it's a different situation, because if Britain goes weak, right, we have a separate situation now. We have a different enemies now. We have enemies who want to conquer us. In Islam, we have an enemy who wants to conquer us.
All countries and all host populations have a vested interest in making sure that not too large a proportion of their population is semi-citizens.
Yeah.
You want people to be full citizens. And if I could just make one very quick point, T.S. Eliot, in one of his one of his books, one of his lesser known works, it's called Notes Towards a Definition of Culture. He actually gives a very useful definition of integration. He defines integration as a process whereby new members entering into something become completely indistinguishable from the old ones.
Yeah.
And so a really good test of whether integration has taken place is whether you notice any significant differences.
Yeah.
So for example, people will talk, liberals will talk about how we've always been a nation of immigrants, look at the Huguenots. The question I always ask in response to that is, where are they? Where is the Huguenot community? Where are the demands for more Huguenot actors? Where are the demands for more Huguenots to be represented at the BBC? It's precisely because they have assimilated and become indistinguishable from the original members. There is no sort of Huguenot Brits.
Yeah.
They're just Brits, and they've assimilated into the majority, and therefore that it doesn't cause any ethno-religious strife or anything like that.
I think so. The thing I would add over there is, when people look at integration, assimilation, or even what it means to be British, right? Because that question gets asked, what is being British anyways? We're looking at aesthetics. We're looking at how a person is dressing, what they're eating, because these are the things that are coming up. How you dress doesn't make you British. Mm. What you eat doesn't make you British. Mm-hmm. Whatever, how you fart doesn't make you British, right? These things don't make you British. Being British or of any nation is a disposition. Whether you have a disposition, your spiritual disposition, does it belong to that national identity or not? So you are inherently, you have an inherent disposition towards a particular nationality, right? Mm-hmm. So we can have every kind of English person being English, but being very different from each other, from the people in London to the people in Bristol to the people in Cornwall to the people everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. But they have an inherent disposition to be of that country. It's not the way that they dress themselves, the way that they speak. That doesn't make it.
Can I just to drive the precision on the definition, because I think it's a useful one. Could you expand a little bit on what you mean by disposition? Because one potential problem I see with that is that, let's go into an important period in British history, the Civil War. I mean, people were incredibly divided at that time, and I think it's fair to say that Oliver Cromwell and Charles I had incredibly different dispositions at that time, ideologically speaking, religiously speaking, constitutionally speaking, politically speaking, yet they would still both be British, or in that context, I suppose, England, it would make more sense to call them both English? Like, is it possible, I suppose what I'm saying, is it possible purely to locate identity in terms of the values you hold? It seems to me that it's something a little bit more immediate than that.
I think it's your nature. Like, and that nature is so inherent, built up, like, because even when people are politically in opposition to each other, they will still have a nature to them that would be inherently of that country, right? So even when you have that big of a conflict between the left and the right, when you just take out all the other ethnicities, take out, but only talk about the native population, right? If you take out the politics away from their mind and you sit them in the room, they will act in similar ways.
Yeah, this is why I talk about Singapore so much, is because you only have to get really litigious when all those sort of baseline assumptions have been worn away, as the Americans are now learning.
And that's on a lesser scale.
Yeah.